Day two of the Web 2.0 Summit 2006 began with a conversation with Amazon.com founder Jeff Bezos. This podcast is brought to you by the Intel Software Network. Look for opportunity in using the web as a platform, using innovation to drive collective intelligence. The Intel Software Network did just that. Intel Software Network developer communities enable you to create and build innovative applications and solutions. Connect and share ideas today. Join the conversation in the Intel Software Network at softwarecommunity.intel.com. Now a conversation with Amazon's Jeff Bezos.
Our next speaker is somebody who I know very well. He's now my largest customer in my book business. He is a friend. He's sometimes a competitor. He is a tireless innovator. I tend to think of him as the Energizer Bunny of Web 2.0 because he keeps reinventing himself and never stops. Jeff Bezos is going to start with a brief presentation so that we have a common ground to talk from. So with that, let me invite Jeff Bezos, founder and CEO of Amazon.com.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay.
I'm also an inveterate attender of Tim's excellent foo camp, which I recommend to you all, except there's no room.
So it's even worse than this.
It's kind of just a tease rather than a recommendation, I'm afraid. But talk to you a little bit today about what Amazon is doing with web-scale computing. We'll have a conversation with Tim. This is the Amazon that people know about. 61 million active customer accounts. Will do over 10 billion in sales this year. 35 different retail categories. We're in 7 different countries. Many of you in this room are probably Amazon Prime members. Bless you. Thank you. We have 1.1 million active seller accounts and 10 million square feet of fulfillment center space. The business that people know a little less about is our developer-centric business. So this is our, now we have 200,000 active developers registered using that service. And we have 10 different web service offerings. I'm going to talk briefly about Simple Storage Service, S3, and the Elastic Compute Cloud, EC2. S3 is an aptly named service. It's very, very simple. All you can do with this service is put, get, and delete data. Storing data in the cloud is 15 cents per gigabyte per month, and a gigabyte of data transferred is for bandwidth is 20 cents. So it's very inexpensive, designed to be highly available, extremely easy to use. EC2 is, just as S3 is storage in the cloud, EC2 is compute in the cloud. It's 10 cents per compute hour. And so for if you work out how many hours there are in a month, it's about $70 a month to have a server that's equivalent to a 1.7 gigahertz x86 box. But the really cool thing about it is that it's elastic. So you can either have one server for a month for $70, or you can have 700 servers for an hour for $70. And so it really changes how you can think about what kind of applications you can build and what you can do with that kind of compute capacity in the cloud. We've gotten a lot of, these things are new, we've gotten a lot of very strong levels of excitement in the blogosphere and from customers. Just recently, Linden Labs, Second Life, when they released a new client, used the service to distribute their clients. And what's really cool about this is that they did it right in the middle of the distribution, and they did it incredibly quickly without even talking to us. It's completely self-service and very inexpensive. This is what we're trying to do with these kinds of fundamental web services, which is to empower developers. We're a small company with big ideas. We now have the capability to build killer applications. Infrastructure is no longer an issue. Just wanted to say thanks. So we're a little bit surprised by how excited people seem to be by these services. There's certainly nothing new about compute, and there's certainly nothing new about storage. People have been remembering things and persisting things for a long time. So why are people excited about this? I have a theory about this, which is that people are excited because they see a future where they will be able to go more quickly from their idea to a successful product. And I think they're seeing that in a lot of different ways, and I think that Amazon Web Services and things like S3 and EC2 fit into that framework for people, and so they see it as a piece of this mosaic that's very empowering. The reality, of course, today is that if you come up with a great idea, you don't get to go quickly to a successful product. There's a lot of undifferentiated heavy lifting that stands between your idea and that success. And what the kinds of things that I'm talking about when I say undifferentiated heavy lifting are things like these. Figuring out which servers to buy, how many of them to buy, and what timeline to buy them. Eventually you end up with heterogeneous hardware and you have to manage that. You have to think about backup scenarios. If you lose your data center or lose connectivity to a data center, eventually you have to move facilities. There's negotiations to be done. It's a very complex set of activities that really it is a big driver of ultimate success, but they're undifferentiated from, it's not the heart of your idea. We call this muck. And it gets worse, because what really happens is you don't have to do this one time, you have to drive this loop. After you get your first version of your idea out into the marketplace, you've done all that undifferentiated heavy lifting, you find out that you have to cycle back, change your idea, and the winners are the ones that can cycle this loop the fastest. And on every cycle of that loop, you have this undifferentiated heavy lifting, or muck, that you have to contend with. And I believe that for most companies, and it's certainly true at Amazon, that 70% of your time, energy, and dollars go into the undifferentiated heavy lifting, and only 30% of your energy, time, and dollars gets to go into the core kernel of your idea. And so I think what people are excited about is that they're going to get a chance, they see a future where they may be able to invert those two, where they may be able to spend 70% of their time, energy, and dollars on the differentiated part of what they're doing. For us, web-scale computing means these things. It has to be elastic, so it's you can scale it up and down quickly. Low latency, reliable and always available, simple, inexpensive, and it has to be pay by the drink so that people can use it in very small, variable quantities if they want to. Here's some of the companies that are using these services today, ranging from Smug Mug, a professional photo sharing website that's doing very well, to Microsoft, announcing a couple of new customers today. One is PowerSet. It's a startup company that many of you probably already know about. It has a lot of buzz, a very brainy team of folks working on natural language search, and they have decided to use EC2 for their back-end infrastructure. Xerox Global Services, you don't know what they do. This is the group that if you have 5 acres of documents in file cabinets and you need to get them OCR, digitized, OCR'd, and indexed, they do that for you. It's a very compute-intensive task, and it's very spiky. They're actually using not only S3 and EC2, but also our simple queuing service, which I didn't talk about today. And if you want to learn more about this, you can go to aws.amazon.com. And just remember, we make muck so you don't have to. Thank you.
That was great.
You want to sit a bit
further. Where?
No, just sit down. But
further from you?
A little forward. No,
oh,
just
sorry.
Sit down a little forward. You were disappearing into the couch.
I see. So. Yeah, that is a cushy couch.
Yeah.
Very comfortable.
So anyway, I guess the big question, I was sort of blown away to see Microsoft as a customer. You'd think Microsoft would be in this business.
not a customer of this business. How did that happen?
Well, I think that Microsoft is a, you know, they have a lot of different business units, and they probably, you know, I'm sure that they think about infrastructure services as well, but they right also now. Have they also have other units who want to get work done today.
Right. So, but that's sort of a damning comment. But
it wasn't intended to be.
I guess big question must be on everybody's mind. I mean, this is a fabulous set of services. A lot of people have been nibbling around the edges, talking about it. I mean, Eric was talking yesterday about how this is just a fundamentally better development model developing for the data center rather than the software artifact. But at the end of the day, it's not Google or Microsoft that's offering these services. It's a retailer. I mean, so clearly you're thinking about more than, you know, what other people are imagining Amazon is. So maybe you could just tell us, what do you see as the future of Amazon?
Well, I know you've talked about us in a very positive way as a dark horse in this area, and yeah. I have a different opinion about that. I think I don't know what the opposite of a dark horse is. But I think
well, you're the leader right now.
I think we're a light horse, uh-huh. a lightly colored horse or something. But this is what we've been doing for 11 years is operating a web scale application, a very complex one that's based on a lot of transactions. With high availability, reliability, and in a high-volume, low-margin business where we need to be very conscious of our cost structure.
So actually, you're saying that your low margin is actually a competitive advantage.
Well, I'm weird that way. I always think high-volume, low-margin businesses are more defensible because they don't provide sort of a deep underbelly that other people can go after. There's not so... what we're always looking at is absolute dollar level of profit and free cash flow rather than percentage margins. But yes, I mean, you know, we have to be very efficient at Amazon.com in order to offer the kinds of pricing and free shipping and things we do. So we've always operated our infrastructure with that mentality. And what we've done is take the things that we were really good at internally and figure out how to expose those and charge for them.
Right, but why? I mean, you know, the street, I think, is obviously conflicted about this because your stock is doing quite well.
Well, I think...
But the analysts are all going, what?
I think why is a really good question. Yeah. But I'll tell you the direct answer and I'll tell you more generally what I think about why. But the answer is we've been doing this for 11 years. We didn't just start doing it. Right. And for several years now, we've been working on these services. We sat here 2 years ago at Web 2.0, and you interviewed me, and you said, you asked me, what is Web 2.0 to you?
Yeah.
And I said, I think people have come to a different conclusion. I mean, it's kind of a semantic argument, really, but to me, Web 2.0 was computers talking to computers. Right. So Web 1.0 was... humans talking to servers, and Web 2.0 is a lot of these things you see with web services.
I'm also remembering after you heard me give a talk about some of these things back in 2003, I came up and gave a talk at Amazon for your developer group, and you complained because I didn't use one of the lines from the talk I'd given at our eTech conference, which was, A platform beats an application every time. And I remember you jumping up in the back and saying, you didn't make that point.
You know? I think you also neglected to make the great point that you always make. I invite him to talk. He has, like, you know, many great points, and he never doesn't make them. But the other one that I always love that you say is follow the hobbyists.
Right.
Which I think is
And
good,
you've certainly
is good
enabling
advice.
A lot of
yeah. And so the point is, why are we doing this? We're doing it because we're good at it, we know how to do it, and we think it can be a meaningful, financially attractive business one day. So we think this is a great business. I would also say
more
generally...
Will it replace your other business, or will you...
No, our other business, we have three businesses today, and they're all customer-facing businesses. We have a consumer-facing business, a seller-facing business, and a developer-facing business. The consumer-facing business and the seller-facing business are the businesses that drive the economics of Amazon today because they're so large. Both of those businesses do. And the seller one is newer than the consumer-facing one, but it's already big enough to have a meaningful impact on the financial results. I believe that one day our developer-facing business will have a meaningful impact too. But let me just say about when somebody asks you why, you know, why do this? I think sometimes that's a very good question and it's worthy of an answer. I think sometimes the right response when you're thinking about things, a more powerful question is why not?
Right. Okay. All right. Well, because you could.
Because we think it's an attractive business opportunity.
So Jonathan's going to hate me for asking this question, but at Sun, they started talking a while ago about grid computing. They put together this big grid. They didn't get any takers, as far as I can tell, or certainly not much uptake. And you've done pretty well right out of the box with EC2. You have any thoughts on why the difference?
Well, we have a longstanding practice, which I will adhere to, of not talking about other companies.
Okay.
But what I can say about EC2 is it's designed to be simple to use, it's designed to be self-service, and it's very inexpensive.
Yeah.
And I think all of those things are important. I think that is...
I think there's a real Web 2.0 lesson here. You know, a lot of people focus on the social aspects of this, but really it's just that business practice, self-service, easy to use, and then it's really, you really are servicing the long tail.
Right. If you have to sign a contract with every one of your customers and negotiate rates and do all of that, you're never going to get the small companies, and some of those small companies will grow into big companies.
Yeah. So where does Alexa and A9, search crawling, which is another set of services, where do they fit into this whole picture?
It's the same thing. They sell... The basic idea is that there are certain pieces of heavy lifting infrastructure that you can take all that fixed cost and resell it to people by the drink as a variable cost. So Alexa has had for many years one of the best web crawls of the whole web. Now, crawling the whole web is a heavy lifting exercise. Mm-hmm. But if you can buy web crawl by the drink, and convert that from a fixed cost into a variable cost, we think, over the long haul, that's a very attractive service to offer to people.
Right. So what other pieces are missing? You know, like if you were sort of to imagine that you're gradually building out this suite of muck.
Right.
What's missing from the muck mix?
Well, there are several pieces missing, and some of them we've been working on for more than 2 years, and they still have not... We still haven't released them, and you know I'm not going to tell you what they are.
Well, but well, I didn't think. Let me ask you about one specifically. How about one click as a web service? I'd use it in an instant if it were priced right.
I think that's a very good idea. I mean, you know, it's something.
So when can we have it?
When can we have that?
What time is it?
Shopping carts suck.
Shopping carts.
Yeah, and you guys have the best one out there.
Well, we also have, I think another interesting service that may be instructive to people who are curious about this, that I think really catches people by surprise, is the one we've just released in beta called Fulfillment by Amazon. Mm-hmm. And Fulfillment by Amazon is a very simple web service where, again, we've made it completely self-service, and you can, using web services APIs, you can make a call and notify us that you are about to ship something to our fulfillment centers. So we have this global network of fulfillment centers. They all run on the same software. You can ship something to us, and we will receive it. You've using Web Service API, you've given us an advance notification that we should be expecting it. We get it. We stow it. And then once we've stowed it, you can send us more messages. You can make more calls to us. And when you do... we will pick those things that you shipped to us and send them to any address that you specify.
So in a way, one of the things that is also a competitive advantage besides your low margin is that you actually can deal with stuff in a way that nobody else can. I mean, everybody else can do bits. You're the only ones who can do stuff.
Sure, absolutely. And here, what we're doing is we're saying we've got this big, fulfillment center network that does, $10 billion a year in sales with very... low selling price items, so it's hundreds of millions of transactions, and we're going to make that the fixed cost to open a fulfillment center is so high, and so what we're doing is saying at pay by the drink variable cost, you can use that fulfillment center, world-class.
At what point do people using this excess capacity, because obviously you have to have enough capacity to service other people besides yourself, at what point does that start to improve your margins? I mean, how far are you from seeing a measurable impact?
We charge prices so that we can make money. So you have to, I mean, with these things like the fulfillment center, you make money on the very first day because our own business is covering the fixed costs of that infrastructure. Right. And as we, you know, add new nodes to our fulfillment center network, the pricing that we put out, the pricing for fulfillment by Amazon is incredibly inexpensive. It's like 45 cents per cubic foot of storage space per month, something like that. Yeah. I might have it wrong. But this is really cool because it allows developers who are, you know, it empowers them to, just by writing software, to treat this 10 million square foot network of fulfillment centers as a huge peripheral device. They can treat it just like a printer.
Right. So that's S4. Right? The solid simple storage service.
It's a better name.
Simple storage service for solids, maybe. Yeah. So let me ask you about sort of power, because one of the things that's sort of been emerging as a little backstory in the data center wars that are looming is who gets power the cheapest? You know, Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, they're all building data centers right near dams. What's your cost of power, and is that something where you feel like you're going to be able to have a pricing?
The biggest cost is not power, and it's not the servers, and it's not the people that maintain the data centers. The biggest cost is lack of utilization. Mm-hmm. It dominates all other costs. So yes, I mean, you know, because we're a high volume, low margin business, we are focused on things like power, and we're well positioned to be extremely competitive with these kinds of services like EC2 and S3 and so on. Yeah. But those are the dominant cost is that everybody in the world who operates a data center, if you add up how often you use your servers 24/7, you're going to find that you use them like 17% of the time.
Right.
So that's the big cost. You've got all of this infrastructure and air conditioning and et cetera, et cetera, and you're hardly using your assets. So you bought a Boeing 747 and left it parked on the runway for 83% of the time.
So, all right. So you think you're basically, so this really is, in some sense, it is profoundly synergistic with Amazon's core business.
Absolutely.
Using your assets. Yeah. So, I guess.
That's how we got into the business. I think it's very important that that our developer customers know that we are in this business to serve them. So it's not just here are the things we needed to do for ourselves, and if you can make use of these, that's fine. What we do is we're in the mode now these things are launched, of listening and trying to figure out how we can make these services better, what kinds of things customers really need. So we'll be developing these services specifically for that developer customer set and treating them as customers.
Great. Hey, one last question. We have a little less than 37 seconds left. I want to ask you about your relationship with 37 signals.
Literally true. We have 18 seconds left.
It was 37 when I thought of it.
So these guys are incredibly humble, in my opinion, and but the fact is, I'm going to learn a tremendous amount from working with those guys. I think they're some of the smartest people out there who are, they have a spare approach that I think is very attractive. And I'm looking forward to being able to learn from them.
All right. Well, listen, thanks a lot, Jeff.
It's my pleasure.
And
thank you.
Jeff Whitehorse.
Thank you.
All right.
Amazon.com's Jeff Bezos at the Web 2.0 Summit. This podcast is brought to you by the Intel Software Network. Combine the knowledge of the Intel Software Network and developers in the community to keep up with the new paradigm of software development. the Intel Software Network developer communities on mobility, manageability, and multi-core provide resources and best practices that enable you to create and build innovative applications and solutions. By connecting with fellow developers, you gain collective intelligence in anticipating and addressing potential issues. Connect and share ideas today. Join the conversation in the Intel Software Network at softwarecommunity.intel.com.